Okay, now we're going to talk about Yiftach. And we mentioned last week that Reb Tzadok says that the famous Ma'amar Chazal, which says that Yiftach Bedoro Kishmua Bedoro, means that in every generation there are at least one, generally several people, who open a Petach Hadash, a new opening, a new avenue of Avodas Hashem. And we said in order for that to hold true, we should probably find something which Yiftach did for the first time in history. Yiftach represents the first individual in Jewish history to be Poseach, a certain Pesach in Avodas Hashem. So let's see if we can find it. Let's see if we can identify relatively soon what Yiftach did and what his unique contribution is, as much as Chazal malign Yiftach for what he did later in life. Let's begin at the beginning of the parak. The Yiftach, the first few words which were on the other page I wrote in hand here on the first page. I'm sorry, I didn't have a stapler. I forgot to bring a stapler tonight, so I scotch taped together the pages. The Yiftach HaGiladi. Everybody see that? The first few words are handwritten in my handwriting there. Yiftach HaGiladi Haya Gibor Chayil. Yiftach HaGiladi was a powerful person, a warrior. Vu ben Isha Zona. And he was the son of a woman who was a prostitute. Violet Gilad is Yiftach, and Gilad was Yiftach's father. Now, what exactly a prostitute means here, not everybody agrees. Some people say, of course, it's simple prostitute. Some people say that Yiftach's mother was a Pilegesh, a concubine. So Targum says she was a Pundakisa. She was an innkeeperess, which makes you wonder what the innkeeperesses were doing there in their inns some of the time. And others say that she was called a prostitute because she was from a shevet other than Menashe. The minhag still was very strong in those days to marry a woman from your own shevet. And Gilad married somebody from another shevet, and that was considered to be an improper thing to do. And therefore, we had sets up the scenario for the next pasuk.
What was the murder?
What?
What are the two
shevet? Menashe. Yeah. We don't know what she was from, but he was from Menashe. We don't know what she was from. Doesn't say.
Is the term Zonos by Yeshua called?
Rachel was a real Zona, right. She was the real thing.
She was also an innkeeper too, wasn't
she? She was an innkeeper. I don't know. She hid those people who came. I don't know if she was an innkeeper. Maybe it could be in the old days when the innkeepers doubled. They moonlighted as prostitutes. Who knows? So in any event, Vatele Eishes Gilad Lobani, the wife of Gilad begat to him other children. And this is, I shouldn't say other children, the other wife, the real wife, had children. Vayilu Bnei Isha, and those children grew up. Vayigoshes Yiftach. Yiftach probably was older. He was divorced. Not divorced. He was kicked out. Vayigoshes Yiftach Vayomer Lo, and they said to Yiftach, Lo Simcha Veveis Aminu. You cannot inherit together with us in our father's house, because you are the son of another woman. In other words, I think it might be locked. You come from either a prostitute or from somebody who's from another shevet. Whatever it was, you're not suitable to inherit with us. So therefore, you leave. Vayibrach Yiftach meis mipnei achav. So Yiftach ran away from his brothers. Vayeshberetz Tov, and he lived in the land of Tov. Now, land of Tov, there are two interpretations here. One is means that it's a good land, and the other is that it was the land which belonged to Mr. Tov, the certain individual called Tov. We find in the Rus that the name of the Goel, v'migalech Tov yigol. So the name of the person who had first shot at redeeming the Rus and the fields which Naomi owned, his name was Tov. So you see, Tov was a common name back then. So it could be Eretz Tov belongs to somebody whose name was Tov. Vayitzlatzu Yiftach. And there could gather by Yiftach Anoshim Reikim, empty people, Vayetzu Imo, and they went out with him. Now I want to propose to you, Rabbi Isai, and this is purely my hypothesis. Well, before I get to that, let me just note that the elders of the tribe did not protest Gidon's mistreatment at the hands of his brothers, and the Malbim says, in fact, when it says Vayibrach Yiftach, he had to flee for his life, because he was afraid that they would kill him would he not leave as quickly as possible. But I want to make a proposal to you. And I want to hypothesize that Yiftach was the first Hasidish Rebbe, so to speak. Yiftach was somebody who gathered to himself Anoshim Reikim. He gathered empty, but I shouldn't say Chassidish Rebbe, a Kiru professional. He was the first Kiru professional. He was the first, he was the first one to bring, to try and be Makarev people and try and take Anoshim Reikim and uplift them. And I'm not going to prove this to you right now. I'm going to try and prove this to you later when in the Perek, where you get to more salient details. But in the meantime, keep this in mind. Yiftach is the first person we find in Tanakh, first Shofet, who we find dealing with Anoshim Reikim, taking people who are empty, obviously bums and worse, and trying to deal with them, trying to do something with them. What he did with them, we don't know explicitly here. Perhaps we'll be able to surmise from later in the parak what Yiftach did. Okay, in the meantime, Vayimi Yomim, days passed, long time passed, by Lachum Ne'amon Im Yisrael, and the Ammonites afflicted the Jewish people. Now this was over a long period of time. When this happened that the Ammonites passed and fought a long time with Amisrael, the elders of Gilad went to take Yiftach to bring him back Meretz Tov from the land of Tov. Now, you see, they weren't doing this out of the goodness of their heart because they did tshuva, because they felt bad about Yiftach. They needed him. They were fellow suffering oppression and now they needed him.
Excuse me.
18 years, I believe, we said in last parak.
Last time we saw that Bnei Ammon was decimated.
What we saw is Bnei Ammon, they regrouped on the other side of the Jordan. Bear in mind that this is Menashe, right? Let me backtrack a little bit. We said Bnei Ammon were vanquished to the extent they had to pull back to the other side of the Jordan River, right? But they were still threatening Menashe. That's where we last left them. At the end of the last parak, there was a camp of the Gilad of the Bnei Ammon, and they were deciding to wage war against Menashe, and the Jews were meeting in Mitzpah to decide to wage war against Ammon. And we had not gone into details, and now we kind of flashed back a little bit in order to build up the details on the Israeli side. So all this time, while the oppression was going on, they had to look for something to save them. Finally, they found this general. They decided, let's go get Yiftach from Eretz Tov. Now, it's possible that at this point already, Ammon had retreated. But bear in mind, we're dealing with the elders of Menashe, who lived on the other side of the Jordan River, on the same side as Ammon. So they were still being afflicted by Ammon. So therefore, they still had to fight this war. Vayomer Yiftach, so the elders of Menashe said to Yiftach, in Pasuk Vav, L'cha v'yisalon l'chatzin, v'nilchama v'neimon, become for us a military commander, and you'll fight against the Ammonites. Okay, so now we're going to see a whole discussion here. What did they offer him first? Their opening position was, look, you become our officer. You take the military command of the nation. And that'll give you significance, and that'll make up somewhat for past mistreatment, and lead us in war. Gideon said, nothing doing. Vayomer Yiftach l'zikne Gilad. Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, you guys hated me. And you kicked me out of my father's house. And why are you coming to me now when you have it bad? You think you're just going to let me go pull the wool over my eyes and I'm going to be happy that you make me a katzin, you make me a military officer? Not good enough. That does not make up for your past sins. Okay, so they said, you know what? Fine. So the elders of Gilad said to Yiftach, okay, granted. It's true. That's why we came now to you. But please go back with us and fight the Ammonites, and if you defeat them, they will make you not just a military officer, but we will make you the actual political authority, the leader of all the people who live in Gilad.
What was his track record of being a military man?
No, because all we know is that Pasukimo, they obviously had a reputation of being, you know, Birionim, of being like, the bums who were out there. The word in Hebrew, I think, is Pushtakim.
Okay.
So in any event, so says the Navi further. Vayomer Yiftach el zikne Gilad, Yiftach said to the elders of Gilad, ha ha ha. That I should be happy with that. If you take me back to fight with the Ammonites, then Asar Hashem b'yosam b'lefonai, and God will give them to me. Of course, Anochi Elochem l'rosh. The Malbim says, he says that goes without saying. If I win the war, of course I want, you're going to make me the head. Huh. You think that that's a concession on your part? That's not what I want from you. What I want from you immediately to be the head. I want to be the head right now. So the elders of Gilad, they were stuck. They said, El Yiftad, okay, Hashem Yeshomea ben Oseinu, God should listen, testify between the two of us that we're going to keep our word. If not, as you said, so we shall do. In other words, we will accede to this demand. And Yiftach went with the elders of Gilad, and they made him both the political authority and the military leader immediately. And Gilad went and he spoke over all these words before God at Mitzvah. Now the question is, what words did he say? And why Dafkat Mitzvah? The Mishkan wasn't in Mitzvah. God's resting place is back on the other side of the Jordan River in Shiloh. What's Lifnei Hashem before God in Mitzvah? What's going on in Mitzvah? So the Mefarshim explained that either he means, the Dvarav means this fact, this covenant which they made with him, that he would become the head, or and that was what he was saying, or that he was davening. Simply, Pshuto Gamashmo, Dvarav means he was davening. And why in Mitzvah? Because we know in Mitzvah, as we said, saw at the end of the previous perek, that this was a place where Am Yisrael gathered to take counsel as to what to do with Bnei Amon. Wherever Jews gather, there's Shechina. There's divine presence. It's true, the place Mitzvah had no inherent sanctity, but it is the place where Jews gather together at that time, and therefore it's considered to have a degree of holiness. It's brought down by some of the Farshim here that this is a place where the kings who were ultimately vanquished by Yoshua gathered in war in order to wage war against the Jews. And I'm not familiar with that because I haven't heard Yoshua lately, but that's what the Radak brings down. I can tell you one other thing about Mitzvah, but I don't know how it ties in. Maybe if you want, you can brainstorm. Where is Mitzvah mentioned in Chumash? What? Gilad, right? By whom? Who was there? Sefer Bereishis. We just had it a couple of parashas ago. Mitzvah, Gilad. Doesn't mean anything. Galaid? Ding, 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 ding. Does that mean?
Yaakov
and Lavan, right. Yaakov and Lavan, they got together and then the place called Mitzvah. Mitzvah, Sharamah, Yitzef, Hashem, Beniyu, Venechem. So I don't know if that's, I couldn't tie that in. I don't know if that's connected. But there is, that's another place where the word Mitzvah occurs. This place, Mitzvah, occurs. In any event, so there is where he accepted upon himself. They made the pact with him. He made the pact with them. Now he's the head. He's the Rosh. He's not just the Katzin, the military officer. He's also the Rosh, the political authority. So now, in his new position as the political head of the Jewish people, at least of the people on the other side of the Jordan River, Vayishlach Yiftach Malachim El Melech Bnei Amon. Yiftach sent emissaries to the king of Bnei Amon. Lemor, and he said to him, Ma li v'lach. What is between me and you? The chibasei lai lilachim arti, that you came to me to fight against in our land. Now, what do you mean by this? He meant, listen, even when people wage war against each other, there's got to be some justification for the war. What justification do you have to wage war against me? Otherwise, this war is this quote unquote an illegal war. There's got to be some basis for it. Yeah.
Is there another political leader among Bnei Israel? Because I mean, you just mentioned the fact that it's only for Manasseh and Ebrei Yarden, and he's going through with Ammon.
At this point, we don't know of any other leadership.
Right.
Yes.
So,
but he's the only leader over Manasseh. The other guys are safe. They don't need him anymore.
So it's just
on the other side, right? On the other side of the Jordan River.
Laissez-faire and the whole Jordan.
That's right. The other side of the Jordan River, everybody is free because the Ammonites retreated. So he is limited right now to Manasseh. That's all. That's where he is. So Vayishlach Yiftach. So Vayomer Melech Bnei Amon. Pasuk Yud Gimel. Vayomer Melech Bnei Amon. The king of Ammon said, "Emalachi Yiftach to the emissaries of Yiftach. Kilakachi Solas Artzi." I'll tell you why. What?
Yiftach's question was A, either disingenuous, or B, just provocative.
No. Yiftach's going to respond to this. It's not a rhetorical question. You'll see. But look, I want my lands back. You know, the Jews took my land. When the Jewish people left Egypt, may Arnon Yabok, from the river Arnon to the river Yabok, out of Yarden to the Jordan. Now give them back to me in peace. And if you give them back to me in peace, I'll go away. So Yiftach had four responses to this. Yiftach responded in four different ways. By Yosef owed Yiftach by Yishlach Malachim Melch Bnei Ammon. So Yiftach sent back messengers to the king of Ammon as follows. A. The first rejoinder is, we took nothing from you directly. Those lands that you're complaining about, we weren't allowed to take from you. What did God tell the Jews when they left Egypt? Were they allowed to attack Ammon and Moab? No way. Who did these lands belong to already when they took them? How did they get a hold of these lands? Shivam is only on the other side of the Jordan. Sichon and Og. These lands have been conquered previously by Sichon and Og from Ammon and Moab, and then the Jews were able to take them. So the first thing is, we didn't get them from you. We got them from Sichon and Og. They already were no longer your lands by the time we got them. Why? Because in the protocols of war, conquest is a legitimate form of acquisition. So Sichon, it used to be at least. So Sichon was...
Good old days.
Good old days, yes. So Sichon, when men were men and wars were wars, then the conquest was a form of acquisition. But at that point, Sichon said, Sichon had conquered for you fair and square. We took it from him. So therefore, we get to keep it. Vayomer lo komar asher, komar Yiftach. And he said to him, thus spake Yiftach, Pasuk Tezvav, V'lokach Yisrael Tzeretz Moav Eretz B'nei Ammon, we didn't take the land of Moav and Ammon, Ki Ba'alo Sami Mitzrayim, when we came up from Egypt, V'ech Yisrael B'midbor Ad Yam Suf, V'yavo Kadesha, we went all around the desert to Yam Suf, and then we came to Kadesh. Now it's interesting, Ma'avim Radakya, which is totally irrelevant to the text, but somehow he wants to say that we can prove from this text somehow that when Bnei Yisrael went through Yam Suf, they made a big U-turn. When they went into the Yam Suf, they didn't go from one side of Yam Suf to another side of Yam Suf. They made a big U-turn in the middle of the sea. They went in and made a U and turned around. What? What, you knew that from Chumash?
Yeah.
How did you know it from Chumash? What?
All the Persians say
that in Chumash?
Absolutely.
The opposite. The Persians say that when
forgive my ignorance. I only know Chumash Rashi. It's not in Rashi.
They walked out.
It's not in Rashi.
They went back, that they got to one side and the Mitzvah came from the other side. It seems to be just the opposite.
Yeah, I always thought it was always the opposite. I thought they walked straight out. Did anybody else know this before?
Otherwise, they'd be walking right back into the Mitzvah.
Yeah? Okay. That's why I'm teaching, so I can learn this. To learn Zana. What? Shad Rashi and Chumash, really?
I'll take a look.
Yeah. So in any event, okay. Look, if you can show it to me, it's coming up soon. What?
They talked about going in
a
circular.
In the Midbar, they went around and around and around, but not in the Yam Suf.
When Paro says in Nebuchim in Bamidbar that they didn't take a straight course, that they farblonded.
Right, but not in the sea itself.
No,
you're talking about in the sea itself. They went in the round. Yeah, they made a big U. So in any event, so I'm sure the Radak didn't make it up, but that's so it was a chiddush to me. And he said, so why bother? Why if they're going to make a U-turn? I don't know if that's how it appeared in the Ten Commandments, but why bother if they're not going straight across? Why bother going through the sea? So the answer was, says Radak, in order to drown the Egyptians. And Echanami, there was no other reason for it. They didn't have to go around. So somehow he proves on this pasuk by Elisar by Midbar Yam Suf that since at the end of the 40 years they came back to Yam Suf. So somehow he proves from this that they went in a big U-turn in the sea. I don't understand how, but it's an interesting and important radak to know. So I'm pointing it out to you.
And so you know, they crossed the Arden, they don't cross the Yam Suf.
Right, so he's saying, somehow or another, the Radak is saying that this Yam Suf was obviously at the end of the 40 years, and somehow or another they came way back, all the way around. I don't know. It's not important for us this evening. I mean, it's important, but not that important. We should go into the details. Now, so at that time, we sent emissaries to the king of Edom, Lamor, to say, I want to pass through your land. And the Edomite king did not let us in. And we sent to the king of Moab just to pass through. He wouldn't let us. We sat in Kadesh. So we never passed through your land, and Ammon's land, and Moab's land, and Edom's land. We couldn't. We weren't allowed to. So therefore, A, we didn't take it from you. Vayelch Bamidbar, we went in the Midbar, by Yosef as Eretz Edom, we went around Edom, Ve'eretz Moab, Eretz Moab, and Moab, Vayavom Yisrael Hashem Shleiver, Eretz Moab, we went eastwards of Moab, Vayachanun Be'ever Arnon, we camped on the other side of Arnon, Ve'lo Bo B'Gvul Moab, and we didn't come into the border of Moab, Ki Arnon V'Gvul Moab, because Arnon was the boundary of Moab. That's interesting here, because the people who made the claim were Ammon. And Yiftach is answering, we didn't go into Moab. So obviously the people who made the claim, the Bnei Ammon, were not doing so just for themselves. They were claiming the Ammonite lands, the Moabite lands. You know, it's like the Palestinians. They want everything, right? It doesn't matter whether they actually owned it or didn't own it. They just want everything. So the thing is interesting. And I have to point this out. I don't have a full explanation, but this might be linked. Throughout the Perek, these people are not called Ammonites. They're always called Bnei Ammon. Well, I don't even know if they really were Ammon. Bnei Ammon means they were trying to claim that they are the descendants of the people of Ammon and Moab, and therefore they have this claim against the Jews.
I use that argument too widely, because that's one of the criticisms today, that it's not really Bnei Yisrael, these are...
That we're not the real Jews, we're Chazarim and all that. Yeah, could be a similar idea. So in any event, that's the first claim. The first response of Yiftach, I should say. The second response of Yiftach is from Psukim Yud Tes Tucha Beis 19-22, and that claim will be that even from Sichon, who took it away, who acquired from you, by conquering away from you, we would not have taken it, this land, had he not started with us. In other words, we didn't start with him, he started with us. Vayishlach Yisrael, now it's seen inside, Vayishlach Yisrael, Malachim El Sichon, we sent messengers to Sichon, Melchem, Mori, the king of the Amorites, Melch Heshbon, who was the king of Heshbon, Vayilom El Yisrael, and the Jews said to him, Nabar Nabar Tzchad Mekomi, let us pass through your land to our place. Vilohem Min Sichon, as Yisrael Abor, Big Vilo, that he didn't trust us to pass through his boundaries. Vayesov Sichon is Klamo, and Sichon gathered all his nation. Vayachanu b'Yotza, and they camped in Yotza. Vayilochem in Yisrael, and they fought with Am Yisrael. Vayitein Hashem Elokeso, we tried to avoid it, but he wouldn't. Vayitein Hashem Elokeso, Sichon ves Klamo b'Yad Yisrael. So God gave over Sichon and all his nation in the hands of Israel. Vayakum, and he smote them. Vayirash Yisrael is called Eretz Amori, Yoshev Eretz Hu, and Am Yisrael overtook all the Amorites who lived in that area. Vayishu is called Vomri, and from the Amorites we got all this land. Me'arnon, Vayabok, Uminamid Boy, Erdain, from the Arnon to the Abok, and from the desert to the Jordan River. That's the second response. Now we come to the third response. Which is that according to prevalent theological conceptualizations at the time of Yiftach, it's ours. Why? Because our God gave it to us. In other words, let's see. Vata Hashem Elokei Yisrael, forget, this is not talking about political issues. The military history. Now Yiftach shifts to another taina. He says, Vata, and now Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Mishu Samori Mivnei Amo Yisrael, you should realize that our God gave us, eradicated the Amorites from before us, Vata Tirashenu, and now you want to take over those lands? Halos Hashem Yorishcha Kemosh Elohecha, those lands which Kemosh, your God, allows you to conquer, Ososi Rosh, that you take hold of. And all those nations which God evicted from before us, also Nirosh. That is our inheritance. That's our heritage. So, you know, Yiftach here is doing two things. First is saying, listen, theologically, it's our land. You know, that's why the Catholic Church had all the difficulties recognizing the State of Israel, because it went against their whole theology that the Jews would always be downtrodden for the rest of time. How can they have this proud, independent state? But what?
You have a state of your own. That's when you're downtrodden.
In any event.
Take it from me.
In any event, so the bottom line was that he's saying to him, theologically, according to the rules of comparative religion, it's ours, we got it, your God Kamosh was obviously ineffectual, it's now our state, our land. And finally, he comes to the fifth complaint, which is that we have a quote-unquote Choshen Mishpah claim on this land. Dr. Zachman, what's a good Choshen Mishpah claim? Just learning a parakeet all about it? Not just the Kenyan, they had a chazakah, but here they had a chazakah of 3 years, but a chazakah of 300 years. Chazakah means they established a pattern, a ownership by living in the land. Somebody lives in land for so many years, in between neighbors, it's 3 years. But here, between nations, I guess it was 300 years. If they've been living there for 300 years, and we claim that we bought it, we have a taina, we have a claim that we acquired the land by virtue of our conquest 300 years ago, so then the land belongs to us. The fact that we've been here for 300 years, and we claim we conquered it, there's no greater proof that the land is ours than the extent of time we've been here, with that claim at the beginning that we got it legally through the vehicle of conquest. Atah, and finally now the Pasuk Chafei. Atah, 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 are you any better? Mi Balak ben Tzipor Melech Moab, from Balak, the son of Tzipor, the king of Moab. Harov Rav in Yisrael, in Nichom Nicham Bam. Even Balak could not claim ownership of this land. Balak, who was the king of Moab way back when, at the time of the Exodus, He didn't fight wars against us. He knew he couldn't fight wars. What did he try and do? Curse. But no wars. That he wasn't able to do. B'shevet Yisrael, and nobody fought us. When I'm so sad in Cheshbon, in Cheshbon and its suburbs, Uva'arov in Aror and its suburbs, Uva'chol Arim in all the cities, Asher Yedei Arnon, which are around Arnon. Shlosh Me'al Shona, 300 years. Why were you quiet for 300 years? You're quiet for 300 years, that's a proof that it's our land. You should have done something previously. And now, since I proved to you rationally with four different responses that you have no claim to this land, I have not sinned against you. You're doing with me evil. You're fighting against me. Yishpot Hashem HaShofet Hayom, God should judge today Ben Bnei Amon, between the Jews and between the Ammonites. That's it. It's not fair. Rationally, judicially, you have no complaint against us. Just one more pasuk. Lo shama melech bnei Amon al divrei Yiftach. The king of Ammon did not heed the words of Yiftach. Asher shalach ilav. You know, you can reason with the guy from today till tomorrow. He ain't going to do no good. Yeah.
All right. We can pause here and go back to some of this.
Yes.
One phrase catches me. Pasuk chaf.
In pasuk chaf.
Lo emin sichon et Yisrael.
Lo emin. Yes.
In this retelling of the historical precedent, what is the lo emin sichon?
Well, I mean, means he did it. It's a difficult usage. I don't have a good explanation for why the pasuk uses him. I mean, it really should be v'lo lo batach, which is not trust.
We have sefer Dvarim. Is it? I'm just relying on it. Is it not in the original vayimain sichon?
It could be vayimain sichon l'seis Yisrael avor b'gvulo. It could be, and that's a parallel. You want to see v'lo?
What's striking, is that how faithful basically the Nusach is.
The Nusach, yes. If there it says
to the terminology used.
Check,
then.
Is there a Chumash back there?
To the terminology used in Sefer Dvarim.
Yeah. Huh? No, certainly, if that's what it says by Yemen, here it says Amin, it's certainly a play on words.
Word,
yeah.
Amin, we go through what it sounds. He didn't trust, didn't believe, didn't have faith, from Emunah.
Yeah.
But there, in the Makorot,
Vayimayim, which has a slightly different meaning.
He refused vehemently, it's different otiyot. Shibush, there's a case here of shibush otiyot?
Yes. Well, it's not a shibush, it's a rearranging, it would be intentional.
Shibush means in the sense that the order is reversed.
The order is reversed. Yes, what did you want to say?
I mean, immediately afterwards, Israel did fight Moab. There was a war.
Not at the time, no. Not at the time they left. No, not at the time Moshe didn't fight Moab. No, Moab tried to curse, but they never were able to.
There's also a play on words here. Hu yashav be'eretz tov.
Atov tov. Yeah, it's interesting. That could be a play on words, you're right. But it's in Parsha, in Devarim. No, sorry. Doesn't say by name. It says V'lo avasi chon melech cheshbon havireinu bo.
Almost all the other phrases here are pretty much faithful to the original.
Yeah. Maybe you can find it somewhere else, but it's not here. Okay. So in any event. What happened next is Vatiyah Yiftach Ruach Hashem. Yiftach had a divine spirit of courage and also divine inspiration. Vayavoretz Gilad Ves Menashe, and he went by Gilad and Menashe. Now, here's the Malvim explains he outflanked the enemy. The enemy was in Gilad, and he went around the enemy from the back. He went by Avoris Gilad Ves Menashe. How so? By Avoris Mitzpeh Gilad. Because he didn't go directly to face the main camp of the Ammonites, which wasn't Gilad. He went kind of on the side. By Avoris Mitzpeh Gilad, he went via Mitzpeh Gilad, Mitzpeh Gilad over Bnei Ammon. Now from Mitzpeh Gilad, he went actually to the nation of Ammon. He attacked them in the rear, destroyed their cities while they were out of the country, and then they had to retreat and fight him in their own territory, which was to their own disadvantage because already they had retreated back into their own land. But that's military tactics. That's not the Chumash. The Navi is not really concerned with that. Now the Navi comes here to the crux of the Yiftach story, for which Yiftach is really derided, perhaps is the right term for this, for all time, denigrated for all time. What did Yiftach do? How many people know the story? What's up? What? How could you not know the story? Can't. Vayda Yiftach neder l'Hashem. Yiftach made an oath to God. Vayomer, and he said, Im nason titen es bnei amon biyadi, if you give the Ammonites into my hand, vayoi yotzei asher yetzei midalsei basili krosi, then that which comes out of the doors of my house when I come back home towards me, Bishuvi b'shalom b'bnei Ammon, when they come back in peace from the Ammonites, v'yol Hashem will be to God, v'alisiu ola, and I will sacrifice it as a sacrifice. Now, before we get into great detail here, okay, I have three pages handwritten on this. So before we get these three pages, we have to understand this. I also wrote down. You can follow along with what I wrote on page. And the second page of my notes, which is on the first page actually by you on the right hand side, and it's for the next 2-3 pages. I had to get a photocopy in a smaller machine this week. So a machine which makes smaller copies. There's a machlokes between the Mefarshim and Chazal. And it's an amazing thing here. Because the Chazal say, that what did Yiftach do? I'll give away the story. Of course, the first thing which came out of Yiftach's house was what? His daughter. So what did Chazal say? What did he do to his daughter? He kept his nether. He slaughtered her. But all the Mefarshim, Kimat, the Radak, the Rabag, the Malbim, they say he didn't slaughter her. He made her a nun. In other words, she was cut off from all other human contact, and of course she never got married. And it's interesting, the Rabag says a fascinating thing. The Rabag says a man can be devoted to God like a Kohen or a Levi, even if he's married. We're four married rabbis, married priests. But a woman cannot. He says a woman cannot be holy and devoted to God if she's married. Because then she has a separate yoke upon her, which is kind of like a separation between her and God, which is the yoke of her husband. So therefore, if a woman wants to be holy, she has to become a nun. If a man wants to be holy, he can do so even if he's married. And he says that's the difference between Shmuel and the daughter of Yiftach. Shmuel was also made by Chana, sacred to God. Yet he married and had kids. because that wasn't an impediment, a wedge between him and God. But for the daughter of Yiftach to be sacred to God, she would have to be completely separated and never get married, which is an amazing thing, which Rabban says. Now, the way the Mefarshim explained it, other than Chazal, is that when it says, the Malbim says this, Vayol Hashem means if it's a human being who comes out of the house, I'm going to devote it to God. Valisiu Ola means if it's an animal which comes out of the house, I'm going to make it a sacrifice. Only if it's an animal. Chazal chastised him. How do you know it's not going to be a pig or a donkey or something like that? You're right. So therefore, he made a mistake. We'll talk about that. So in any event, and the Radak's Lashon here is very interesting. This is a very dangerous Radak. The Radak says, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, at the end of the Pasuk, he says it, after he brings down that what Chazal say, what he says, that it was not, they didn't kill her, he just made her a nun. The Radak says, the Divrei Razal, the words of Chazal, im Kabbalah hi biyodom, if it's a Kabbalah in their hands, aleinu lekabla. If they had a tradition to this respect, we have to accept it. It's a very interesting thing the Radak is saying. Say, if they had a tradition. But what's the alternative to that? That means that the Radak is saying, you normally, you know, we are accustomed to think that anything that Chazal say is a Kabbalah, right? It's a Mesira. But the Radak obviously didn't hold that way. The Radak held that certain Midrashim are clearly Chazal's Parshanut, Chazal's interpretation of the Psukim. And therefore, if it's not one of the Kabbalah-type Chazals, meaning not something which they received as a tradition back from Sinai, and it's just a Parshanut Chazal, it's Chazal's exegesis, Chazal's interpretation of the Pasuk, then the Radak held that he was allowed to disagree with them. And the Radak says, I don't know what kind of Chazal this is, but if it's a Chazal which is Kabbalah, I have to accept it. If it's Chazal, which they said is their interpretation, I can argue. So it's because this falls somewhere within the extremes. I'll give you the two extreme opinions within Orthodoxy, of course, vis-a-vis Chazal and Rishonim. Because we find that many Rishonim argue with Chazal in interpreting Psukim. The Avi Avos HaCholkim is always the Ibn Ezra. He argues in Chazal many, many times in explaining Psukim. But we find the Radak and the Ralbag, and there are a few others, I forget, they slipped my mind offhand, who occasionally argue in Chazal. So, the Michtam Eliyahu, who perhaps we could call the right-wing approach, in Chelek Dalet Amud, page 355, says that they didn't really mean it. They didn't really mean to say differently than Chazal. They just did it so if there's somebody who's so hung up on Pshuto Shel Mikra that he can't tolerate Midrashim, and I'm a Oretz, a person who's not accustomed to Midrashic material, so for that person they tried and gave him a simple, they conceded that Chazal are correct, and that what they were saying was not Emes, it was just an order that a person who could not accept Chazal for whatever reason would have some alternative. That's one position. The extreme left positions, quote unquote, is given by Rav Shmuel HaNogid. Shmuel HaNogid was a Rishon who wrote a Hakdama to Shas, which is printed in the Vilna Shas in the back of Masechta Brachos. And he said, one has to accept all halachic material from Chazal, but one doesn't have to accept agadic material. If you don't like agadic material that you find in Chazal, it's a very dangerous thing. He says you can reject it. It's very, very dangerous. So the Radak falls in the middle. The Radak obviously holds it depends what kind of material it is. And the Radak himself doesn't know which is what. But if it's something which they have a Mesoira on, of course, even in matters of Agadata, you have to accept it. If it's something which they didn't have a Mesoira on, then it seems, according to the Radak, one is allowed to take issue. So this is a very interesting approach, Stam, in knowing, very interesting question, in knowing how to deal with Rishonim will give different interpretations other distinct from Chazal. And all three of these understandings are, as again, as I say, within Orthodoxy. These are all Torah true understandings, and I'm trying to give you the whole array of them. In any event, let's talk about Yiftach himself. Yiftach, there are very few midrash about Yiftach, but we can construct Yiftach's personality from the midrashim which there are. And I wrote them down here from some midrashim, some Reb Tzadok, some Gemaras. The first one is from a Aleph Beis Ben Sira, which is one of the minor midrashim, not perhaps the mainstream ones. And it says here, Yiftach haya tzaddik. Yiftach was a tzaddik. V'daim shchenim roim. And he lived with bad neighbors. Perhaps, although it doesn't say that, those are the Anoshim Rekim who gather with him in Eretz Tov. Mishevet Ephraim, who came from the tribe of Ephraim. He saw that his bad neighbors, what did they used to do? They used to burn their kids as their Avodah Zarah. And he said, oh, this is interesting. Let me do this too. A tzaddik he was. And he did this out of tzidkis. That's why he killed his daughter. But since he did that, Nasa Rasha, he became an evildoer. And we'll see in next parak, next week, terrible things he did. He didn't merit being buried. It says he became a leper, and his limbs fell all over the cities of Gilad. And that's why it says in next parak, he was buried in many cities throughout Gilad. An arm there, a leg there, you know, all over, wherever stuff fell, that's where it was buried. That's one of the minor midrashim. Now let's come to the mainstream medrash, the Medrash Tanchuma. Medrash Tanchuma says, Zeshomer HaKosuv, this is what the Pasuk says, Pri Tzadik Eitz Chaim. The fruit of a Tzadik is the tree of life. Lokeach Nefashos, and somebody who wants to take souls has to be a Chacham. Or if somebody wants to do Kiruv, has got to be a Chacham. What does that mean? Im Yeh Adam Tzadik. The person will be a Tzadik. Vafo Pishu Tzadik. Even though he's a Tzadik. Veno Eisek B'Tayra. If he doesn't learn Tayra, Ein B'Yodo Klum. It's worthless. Ela pri tzadik eitz chaim. The fruit of a tzadik is the tree of life, zutera. Shemitokshu ben tera, when he knows tera, hu lamed hech lokech nefashos. He learns how to be makariv people. Shenam, as it says, lokech nefashos chacham, who can be makariv people of chacham. Kainat moitze begilon yiftach giladi. And that's what you find by yiftach. Vipnei shaloya ben tera. Because he wasn't a Ben Torah, he wasn't a Torah scholar, Ibet is Bito, he lost his daughter. Oh, see a fascinating thing here. Yiftach was the first Makariv, as I said, the first Kiruv professional. Problem is, it's not just enough to be a Kiruv professional. You have to be a Ben Torah as well. And since Yiftach was not a Ben Torah, what happened was, he was influenced by the very people he set out to be Lokeach Nefashos from. And he said when they had some form of zealotry, which they practiced, and it looked good to him that this would be a good form of, you know, worship, he adopted it for himself. He took on that thing for himself. Let's see further.
But yet, and the arguments that he used,
yeah,
were all historical.
With Yiftach's arguments?
Yes.
We didn't see them yet.
We saw things in 400 years, he said.
Oh, those arguments.
Those And he used the Hashem's word.
So he wasn't. You don't have to be. So you can be a historian to use those arguments. You can be a simple Maimon who knows history. That doesn't mean he was a big scholar. I don't know, you know. Obviously, Chazal are saying he knew something, but he was in general, we find this in Pirkei Avos. It says, Lo buri rechet. Right? So all the Rabbeinu Yonah there and all of it says, you can be an Amma Oretz and be a tzaddik. An Amma Oretz, a person who knows nothing, can be a tzaddik, he can be a rechid, afraid of sinning, restrained. But a chassid, somebody who is a exemplary, outstanding individual, that an Amma Oretz can't be. And Gideon was a tzaddik, and I'll explain that in a few minutes in greater detail, but he couldn't have been a chassid. Okay, now what's going on? Why is this happening? How do we explain this? So the Gemara Menachos Daf Chav Tes. Gemara says, "Mipnei manivra olam hazeh behei." Why was this world created with a hay? It says that whatever it is, behei el tolos haaretz versus shemayim haaretz behei baram. The Chazal say behei baram. This world is like in hay. Why is it like a hay? They should doim alach sadra because the world is like a building with a roof but many large windows. And it's an open achsadra. Has a hole in the middle. Right? Just like a hay. Shekola wrote to La Tseisietze. Anybody wants to drop out, can drop out. My time at Tayakari. Why is one leg dangling in the hay? right? There's a small leg which leaves the opening on the side. The chader b'tshuva, if somebody wants to do tshuva, ma'ali le, he goes in through the side hay, through the side door. V'levach, let him go out the same way he came in, from the bottom, let him go up. Lomastai milsa, doesn't work. What does that mean? So Tzadik explains. It means like this. The koshkinim over Rishon, if a person transgressed Naveir once and twice, which Chazal say, Rav Huna says name Rav, over Rishon, if a person transgressed Naveir more than twice, it becomes simple like it's mutter. It becomes, he doesn't no longer feel guilt pangs. The Alkain Pan Rishon and Vishnil Mokhlo. And that's why it says on Kosh Baruch Hu's Mavir Rishon Rishon. The first two times when you still feel guilty about it, God doesn't punish you about it. God punishes you for the next times when you no longer feel guilty. Lo nefshav adayin l'chait. Alpam shlishis. It's only considered a chait the third time around. Da'at nech ta'avona. Then his sin stains him because he no longer has those feelings of guilt. Chetu ashlishi is third time he sins. Who etzlo ket and becomes as if it's mutter. The lo b'kav kolkach, and it's not so easy anymore. At least yisorer lo shemen to rouse himself to do tshuva kapar mishar mishin like the first and second time. Therefore, it's not good enough in mikodesh pesach tachton to go in through the bottom way. Shuashar laHashem, the bottom way is the gate to Hashem. Asher tzadikim yavo bo, tzadikim can take that way. Lagdir atzmo, a tzadik can fend off any avera. Ritzam hashadover also because he's aware that it's also and that's good enough. Baal tshuva can't. He already sinned. He already made a mutter by himself. So therefore, Rak Tzorich L'Romei Matzmo, he has to uplift himself from Madrega Gvayesa to a much higher level. Shua Pesach Elyon, to the upper way in. Dainu Shlul Asos Dover, Mashainu L'Nachas Ruach, Umili Rotzah Shezbrach, he's got to focus completely on doing things which are just the will of God. Ubezah Apilu Shanas Lo Keheter, that way, even because he said he became Mutzatim, Mikomakom Nonetheless Makir, Deino Asiyos Ratzon Hashem Yisrael Koponim, he realizes that wasn't was the Ratzon Hashem, and now he's able to force himself not to transgress the Avera. Now that's not yet 100% clear. I'd like to clear to make it a little bit more clear. Yitzchok thought, Yitzchok is one of the few people in Tanakh we find actually taking the nether. Yitzchok thought, what's a way of doing tshuva? Bear in mind, Yitzchok perhaps himself was not such a negative person, but he was involved in the tshuva process. He was a lokech nefashos. So obviously his way in life was a way of tshuva. So Yitzchok thought, how does one do tshuva? How does one ascend as a baal tshuva? By offering things on oneself. The whole problem with a sinner is that things are not so lokeheter. So how does one restrict oneself? How does one restrain oneself? By nedarim. Like by taking nedarim. What does a neder do? A neder is practice. A neder is taking something mutter, something which is permitted. You take a neder not to eat meat. So meat is mutter. You restrict yourself. That's what a neder does. So Yiftach was a noder. Why? Because he was teaching the Torah of restrictions. Till now you were sinning. You were uninhibited. Start restricting yourself. Start accepting upon yourself nedarim. As a fascinating Gemara in this respect, which Reb Tzadik points out, it says in the Masechta Nedarim, by the way, one of the basic principles of Reb Tzadik, basic, Reb Tzadik 101, is that any agadata which appears in a Masechta has to do with the major theme of that Masechta. For instance, if you find an agadata in Bava Basra, no, Bava Basra is a bad example, you find an agadata in Sukkah, which has a theme, Sukkahs, then whatever that Agadata is talking about has got to have something to do with the same theme as Sukkot does. So if you find an Agadata in the Masechta Nedarim, that Agadata has got to have a theme which ties into the theme of Neder. And we find an Agadata in the Masechta Nedarim which says, Imole Chot Yisrael, if the Jews had not sinned, Lo Nitan Lem El Chamisha Chum Shetorah, they only would have had the five books of the Torah, V'Sefer Yeshua Bilvad. And the book of Yoshua, that's it. Because it's important to know where the boundaries of Israel is, how they conquered it. That's why Yeshua is important. So why do they get all the rest of the books? When there's so much anger because of sin, you need more wisdom to overcome it. I know that's Sarseu v'Darseu, turning around the phrase, Rov Chachma, Rov Kas, and saying, Kas is Rov Kas, the Rov Chachma, but that's okay. Ulekach Boma, Amar, says, why does the statement come? Ali Amole, Chot Yisrael. What? Like, okay, because it's a medrash. That's why we can medarshan like that. And why did this statement come in Masechet Nedarim? It's immediately adjacent to a statement which begins on Amud Aleph. Shanodar Nikra Rasha, that some of you takes a nether is called a Rasha, because you might not keep it. V'yoliv chadla chadola, and we say refrain from the dorim because it says Mishom chadurog, because it says Rishoyim should refrain from doing anger causing events, provocative things. Lomai to tell us Shachoyda Linda, from which we learn that some of you ceases to take a nether chodel mi rogis v'kas, he stops being angry and stops being causing annoyance. Shaneder, because the things are linked. Shaneder nimshach machmoso, nedarim come from anger. Mitzamidas hagvura, for a person's gevura, strength, vakas, and anger. Which causes God's light to be diminished. What do we mean by this? We mean that gevura is called Ezu Gibor Hakobe Sheitz Yitzro. Gevura and Kaas are linked. Gevura is somebody who's stoic, who's strong, who's restrained. It's also somebody who's quick to anger. A zealous person. Such a person makes Nadarim very quickly. And what? Cohen, a redhead, all those are tempers. So in any event, then the same thing is true about a person why Amiso needed so much Torah, because they had so much kas. Now, but there are two types of the Nadarim, says the Tzaddik, in a different place. He says there's some good Nadarim. Who took a good nether? Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov said Aser Asrenu Loch. There's some bad Nadarim. That was a nether, yeah. Vaidor Yaakov said explicitly in the pasuk, Vaidor. Yeah, it was a nether. So what's a good nether and what's a bad nether? So Reb Tzaddik explains, without getting into the Kabbalah of it, Reb Tzaddik says that if a nether which fits into the language of a nether is a good nether. In other words, Halach, which says, what's in between a nether and a nedava? A nether is Hare Olai, I accept upon myself to do a certain thing. A nedava is Hare Zu. This animal should be given to the Beis HaMikdash. Or this thing should be given to somebody else. A nether, says of Tzaddik, is hare olai. Olai means out, lehitalot, to uplift oneself. A nether which a person focuses within oneself on uplifting oneself can serve a higher purpose. A nether which is to bring oneself up. A nether, however, which is to restrain oneself, to create boundaries, and in essence has to do with something outside of oneself, that is not a positive nether. And the two types of nedarim, it's interesting, one can identify in as being tshuva meira and tshuva me'ava. What's a tshuva meira? Reb Tzaddik says, and based on the Gemara Nedarim says that some of you transgresses an aver, the Gemara says nedarim, and is mizbayesh and is embarrassed from it, their moichel is aver. Why? Says Reb Tzaddik, because busha means a person has yira, a person has fear. Busha is the same letters, boshet, and tshuva are made up of the same letters, almost, right? Boshet and tashuv, they're similar. So the lower level of tshuva is the level of restraint, feeling embarrassed, feeling shamed, withdrawing because of that from the activity, the negative activity which one did, because one is afraid. One is fearful of the punishment, one is fearful of the terrible consequences of what one has done. That's a lower level of tshuva. A higher level of tshuva me'ava, out of love, is the quest, the yearning to uplift oneself, to get to a higher level, to make oneself go to the other side of the hay, to ascend deeper into oneself. And Reb Tzaddik explains that why a hay? Because in a neshama and Kabbalah there are five levels. The nefesh, the ruach, the neshama, the chaya, and the yechida. The nefesh is the part of the soul which animates the animal side of the body. the ruach is that which gives a person the power of speech. The neshama is the power of intellect. The chaya is the spiritual source of any Jew, and the yechida is that which unifies man with God. Yitiached means to connect. What? No. A different time, not now. But in any event, when it says that a person gets into his to the hay, it means he gets to his higher level. He wants the return. He yearns for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's tshuva me'ava. So the type of tshuva which a tzaddik without Torah would do. You see this also, when in Bali tshuva. If a person is not, in a modern Bali Tshuva, if a person just wants to be frum, and he doesn't have that inner drive to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the natural tendency is to adopt a lot of chumras, become very restrained, to pull back, to avoid, to be careful not to do things. He becomes a Kavish Yitzro type of person. And that leads to zealotry, a kina, a friction, which is really antithetical to the true Ratzon of Hashem Yisbarach. Tshuva me'ava, a person who has Torah, who's bonding with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a deeper sense, he doesn't have that kind of reaction. That's a much higher form of tshuva. Reb Tzadok says a very interesting thing. He says that people from Shevet Yosef, they're not so good at tshuva. He says, Shevet Yosef, their midos to be tzaddikim. They're taket tzaddikim, and they're FFBs, so to speak, right? They're tzaddikim from birth. They're not good at being bali tshuva because they're bali gvura, they're bali kas. When they become bali tshuva, watch out. They'll become the ones who throw the rocks on Shabbos. He says that the people who are better bali tshuva are the people from Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Reuven. And he says, Reuven, of course, did the first tshuva with his father's bed, putting in a different tense, and Yehud also the tshuva with Tamar, and their great great grandchildren are the archetypes for all generation of tshuva. David, which did tshuva from the Maisa Batsheva, and Hoshea, who is a great great grandson of Reuven, who said tshuva Yisrael Hashem Elokecha. And what did he say? Kechui machem dvarim b'tshuva Hashem. Because there the Mefarshim say, God doesn't need deeds. He doesn't need karbanos. He doesn't need zvachim and olos. All he needs is devarim. That you should yearn for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't do deeds, especially deeds which have to do with zealotry. Rather, turn to your inner pnimius, kechui machim devarim, words, and their return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Gideon's problem, of course, he was from Yosef, was that he was a tzaddik without the Torah. And therefore, when he saw some deed of zealotry which he could do for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he thought, this will make me even better. If I sacrifice somebody else for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is the ultimate deed of sacrifice, of zealotry, of chumrah, l'shem shamayim. The whole nether was based on that. That was where Yiftach went astray. Yiftach tried, but a tzaddik who's not a bentura ultimately will fail. That's the bottom line. Okay?
What is his wording going to be different? Like he had said, anything that comes out of my house will be dedicated to Hashem.
Well, that's basically what the Rishonim said. And the Mefarshim say that that's what he meant to say. Again, that's the dichotomy between Chazal and the Rishonim.
Because I'm thinking now of what Yaakov said regarding the Trafim, and that Hashem had a tie of it because Rachel had it. He said, anyone who has it will die, So I'm just wondering what the difference is.
Yaakov made a mistake there too. Who said Yaakov did the right thing when he said that about the trophy? That was right. Rachel died as a result.
So that was just as bad.
Yeah, that was quick, very hasty of Yaakov. Menashe. That's Yosef. Yeah.
Barring the last interpretation about zealotry.
Yeah.
Putting ourselves in Yitach's place. When he said this, what in his mind's eye, in his vision, what did he anticipate coming out of the house?
Well, according to
Karbanos.
But according
possibly,
to the Malbim,
human being would come out.
According to the Malbim and the Radak, he actually did anticipate that. He just didn't think it would be his daughter.
But it could have been his wife.
Could have been somebody else, but not his daughter. Yeah, right. Not his daughter. That's the main thing. Because like the Ralbach said, had it been a boy, it would have been okay. It was a girl. That was the problem, and that's why she had to remain a nun. So in the meantime, let's see if we can get a little bit further in the parak. Vayavar Yiftach is Bnei Amon. Now we're flashing back to the war. Yiftach passed to the Bnei Amon. Lilachim bomb to fight with him. Vayidnei Hashem Biyodo. God gave him over to his hands. Vayakemi Arer, he smote them from Arer. Aboch Aminis, Esrim Ir, 20 cities. Vadavel coming to the plain of the vines. Mako Gdolimot, he smote them very, very devastatingly. Vayakanu Amon. Bnei Amon, Bnei Bnei Israel, and the Ammonites were then subordinate to the Jews. Vayavo Yiftach HaMitzvah Beisel, Yiftach came out to the mitzvah. Vinei Bito Yotzis, the cross on his daughter, was coming out towards him, besupim with...
I don't know why he was at mitzvah. He lived there.
He lived at mitzvah. Interesting. But that doesn't show...
I don't know.
Could be. Right. That's a good point. Vinei Bito Yotzis, the cross on his daughter, was coming to him, besupim mecholos, with drums and with dancing. Ferakhi Echida. He was, according to the Malbim, this means... She was the only daughter he had. He had no other children other than that, any son or any daughter. So the Radak says, in one interpretation, Ein lo mimenu, is as if it says Ein lo mimeno, that this girl had not yet given birth to any children. And another interpretation, he says that Gidon had no other true children of his own, but he did have stepchildren from some wife of his who was married previously. It's not really relevant. In any event, Vaikirososa, when he saw her, Vaikras Begadav, he rent his clothing. Vayomini said, Ahabiti, woe my daughter, Hachreichratani, you have defeated me. Vatayisa Bechrayan, you have destroyed me. Vanochi Patisi Pi Hashem, I opened my mouth in haste to God. Vlo chol chaloshuv, and I cannot renege on my word.
This goes contrary to the last long, convoluted drash, which said that because he's a zealot, that he really wanted it. Positive confirmation. He really was.
No, he kept it now.
No, but once he crying, he should say, yeah, fine, here's my opportunity once and for all at long last.
So the Malvin says like you. The Malvin is different pshat in the pasuk. The Malvin says completely differently in the pasuk. The Malvin says, this is not pasuk pshat, it goes against Chazal, but he said it as a question. Biti, Achrei, Chratani, is this the end? Vata Yisboch Roy, do you think that now I'm destroyed? Vanochi, Patsisi, Pila, Hashem, do you think that now they open my mouth to God, below Chalashuv, I can't renege? I can renege. I'll find a way out of the net.
That's not
I'll be Mitzchare, Mitzchare.
Yeah, but not by Yikra, that's the words that came out of his mouth, not the actions.
Yeah.
By Yikra, Begadav.
Yeah, because he didn't realize it would be his daughter. Look. But still, what really, the worst thing is that, you know, we're going to have to finish this next week, is that he actually goes through with it. And I can't, it's later, it's time for Mark.
What? Big question.
Yeah, it's great. I can't.
Everybody else.
Right, I can't.
Do it.
That's right, we have to speak about all that. I don't want to rush through it. So for next week, we'll pick up from Pasuk Lamed Hei.